the Sean Chandler Podcast, a place to talk movies and nerd culture way too much. Joining me, as always, is Griffin. Griffin, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man. I finally was able to get a haircut, so I can relate to that feeling that I guess you've had for several weeks now. So I'm feeling great, man. I'm ready to talk movies and all that good stuff.
Yeah, it was weird.
The sudden streaming services.
Yeah, gotta get to that. As soon as I got a haircut, it was like, this is a different experience. I forgot what this was like to not have my head have so much on it, and also not have to put nearly as much work into cutting my hair. That was also grooming my hair on a daily basis. So that was a nice little touch. So if you're listening to the audio version of this, be sure to leave a like, a review, all of that fun stuff. This is being streamed live directly to YouTube. We post the times for that every week on my community tab so that you can know when to join in on the live streams on these if you want to throw some questions in. But yeah, we got a number of different things kind of coming up from this week. First off, the Oscars have kind of finally proposed their plan for how they're going to delay everything. Warner Brothers, after much speculation, did in fact delay Tenet. DC announced their own little fan event to kind of build some excitement. We're going to talk about Quibi. And I got a couple of reviews I'm going to throw in here. One of them for Da Five Bloods. Finally got to watch that one last night. And then this upcoming weekend's 7500, a new Joseph Gordon-Levitt film. So number of different things to talk about today. Fun times. But if anyone is watching live, if you want to go ahead and throw your comments in on whatever we're discussing, we'll try and incorporate some of what you have to say into the discussion, especially if you have some conversations or if you can fill in any gaps that we miss on any of this. But let's kick things off talking about the Oscars. So naturally, movies basically stopped coming out in March. Doesn't look like we're going to get much. Even once they start coming out a whole 6 weeks from now, there's still only a handful of movies. So many things have been pushed back. So the big question was, are they going to postpone the Oscars? What are they going to do to kind of fiddle with some of that stuff? And they'd already announced that they were going to be a little bit more loose on allowing streaming releases in. In the past, they kind of required movies to be released in theaters, specifically in New York, in LA, for a certain number of days, about 2 weeks on like 10 screens or something like that, to qualify for the Oscars. They're loosening a lot of that up, and now they've kind of postponed the actual ceremony itself until the end of April, and then you've got a couple more months, the first 2 months of 2021 as well, for to be eligible for next year's Oscars. My gut reaction on all of this is I get it. I know why they're doing this. I know why they want to postpone. The flip side to the other side of my brain is to say that we all know it's a weird year. So you make it two weird years if you shave 2 months off of next year.
Right.
And so my default thinking is it certainly makes it so we have 1 year that's basically a dud. But I just don't have a problem with that. Like if this is year, there's something weird happens, my default is to say I wouldn't even shift the eligibility and all that stuff. But I don't blame them. I don't hold it against them. We are in times that there's no comparison. That's just what would I do? I wouldn't move it. What's your kind of take on this?
I don't mind the moving of the ceremony. That's fine. That makes sense to me. I don't understand what shifting the eligibility window back a month really does, other than like all it really does is give the films that premiered at Sundance an opportunity to slide into the Oscars realistically. So you could have a film like, I don't even know what it would, some prestige picture. Like, I don't know, say Netflix wanted to delay David Fincher's new movie until like they could premiere it at Sundance next year because they knew that I could get into the Oscars by doing that. So that's the only thing that really makes me a little nervous about it. And it kind of reinforces the stigma that the Academy is a little lazy when they don't, you know, because there's been a lot of great movies that have come out this year. They've been really small. Yes, they've gone to VOD, they've gone to streaming, but like it doesn't, you know, take away the quality of those movies. And we still have an entire second half of the year yet. Granted, it's really uncertain as to which films are going to come out. But, you know, it's maybe the Academy just needs to start looking around and trying harder to find those films. It'll be a weird year. It'll be a dud year. But I mean, I don't know. It just shifting it to the end of February is really weird for me. To the end of January, end of January is okay. That's fine because there are a lot of like Oscar-y movies that kind of get full theatrical releases
in
January, anyways. And so it's like now they don't necessarily have to play the weird like okay, we're going to do the limited December release and then big January release. They could just release in January or whatever. But yeah, that's the only thing to me that really stands out as just being bizarre. The Ceremony getting shifted back, that's fine. I get that.
Yeah, I that's where I try to understand exactly what is the rationale. Because even from my perspective, I mean, not from my perspective, it's widely known that most Oscar releases start in like August, September. That's where the big Oscar push happens. It's kind of well known that if you want your movie to win an Oscar, you don't put it out in February because there's such a delay. People forget about it. All the strategic reasons, they're already backloaded on the year. And perhaps maybe that's their thought is like, okay, if that's now going to be just cram packed with all the blockbusters, that's we'll give ourselves January and February. Maybe there's something like that. But yeah, I just I don't even I just don't like the game side to it of like, let's just say it's a weird time and just accept that and kind of throw that like so many other people were kind of like, okay, this year's a bizarre one. We'll just kind of throw it out, move on with our plans. And and I get it if you're that smaller film that you're counting on the prestige of getting nominations, getting the buzz, the ceremony season, all of that award season, and you're counting on that as part of your marketing plan, it gets really weird as soon as that's also the new summer season. If the summer is now the winter season at the same time, because clearly – well, as we're going to talk about in just a second, the summer movie season has been erased. But it's all just part of the weirdness. So there's no good solution. I don't blame them. I'm not like pointing my fingers. I'm not looking down. What would I do? I would have just kept it the same. And it feels a little bit weird to me.
Yeah.
What they're doing.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Moving right along on kind of these same lines. Speaking of delays and the consequences of the year 2020, finally, Warner Brothers has made the decision that everybody thought they were going to do, but much less dramatic than was expected. It says that Tenet has been delayed by just 2 weeks. It's only been pushed back 2 weeks, so not a big deal at all. And then Wonder Woman was pushed back 2 more months. So it was supposed to come out last week. It's now coming out in October. And then several of their other big projects kind of also got shuffled down the line. A lot of that stuff, anything that's beyond the immediate months, I just assume everything's kind of, as we've said before in here, I just assume it's all in perpetual motion, constantly being shuffled around, because that is exactly what has been happening since all of this began. They're trying to figure it out as they go along because we don't know what's going to happen. And I imagine that there's going to be a massive shuffle right after Mulan, Tenet come out, and we get an idea what happened.
Yeah, so you think some projects will move up?
Or move back.
Okay.
I think there is if Mulan comes out and it makes $70 million opening weekend.
Yeah.
They'll reshuffle, and then Tenet makes $100 million, they're going to reshuffle. Tenet makes $30 million, they're going to shuffle. And so I think the odds that something interesting is going to happen, or Mulan comes out and it makes $100 million. People are like, man, we went back to the movies. And then there's a spike 2 weeks later and they're going to shuffle. I mean, they're just absolutely reading every piece of data that they can. And so I just assume everything's going to shuffle. That's kind of I'm constantly, because it's weird. There's no precedent. And everyone's trying to like speculate as to why everyone's doing everything. And you know, saw some tweets a couple days ago that I just reading into all the speculation. Like, why is Christopher Nolan pushing so hard for a July release? Is it because he has a savior complex? He's set to make 20% of the opening weekend. Therefore, he wants it to come out in July. And then people point out like, when only 70% of theaters are open, they can only be at 25% capacity. Yeah. You think he's and like, he's playing the long game. Nothing else is out there. Therefore, he knows. It's like,
no, that's not it.
That is ridiculous.
That's ridiculous. I actually do want to ask you your kind of take on that, because there's a lot of, you know, this is a big, big, bold move for Christopher Nolan. In fact, it could, I've seen a lot of tweets about this, and I have to agree, it could, if by and large, affect his legacy. You know, if he hinges all his bets on reopening theaters with Tenet, positioning himself, you know, because he's always been like the theatrical experience guy. He's been, I'm going to shoot on film stock. We're going to shoot in IMAX. We're going to give the audience an experience that they'll never forget. And we want them to see it in theaters. That has been his big MO forever. That has been Christopher Nolan. That's the hill that he is going to die on. And so, you know, him really pushing for Tenet to come out in when it was intended on doing so, you know, obviously they just pushed it back 2 weeks. It's big. And yeah. Warner Brothers is setting him up to be the fall guy if this goes awry, basically. So I don't know. I kind of want to hear what you think of this, how you think it's going to affect his career in the long run. Do you think that the gamble is going to pay off? And if it doesn't, what does this mean for him going forward?
Yeah, I think a lot of where there's weird conversations about some of this is that the vibe, the energy coming out of New York in LA is very different from the rest of the country.
Yeah.
Because, but they have a very loud voice, and they have a loud voice because they were hit the hardest, and they have a loud voice because they are the cultural centers of the country. And in terms of movies, in a lot of ways, cultural center of the world, in certain regards. And so then what you have a situation where a bunch of people, like where I'm living in Texas, like nobody is in kind of freak out mode because nobody knows anybody that died from Corona. I don't know anybody that knows anybody that has Corona. There's only a handful of cases in the entire city that I live in. And so it's not that it's not here. Of course it is. It's not that we're not afraid. It's not that, like, you know, if you go out, you see people wearing masks everywhere. But at the same time, it feels a little bit more like this distant thing. If you're in LA, if you're in New York City, it's this, like, why would you go back out to the movie? Like, it's like, that sounds like an insane thing to do. Yeah. And so then I think that there's just a very big cultural disconnect between the cities and how hard those cities were hit, how densely populated those places are, because like when the conversation, you know, when you're on Twitter, it's everyone from all over a very diverse country and a very diverse world all in one place having a conversation. And it's like two people that are talking two different languages. Like everybody that's in LA that's making posts about Christopher Nolan and reopening theaters have a totally different vibe than every conversation I have with someone in real life here in Texas. Like no one here, like,
so. Yeah, well, that was actually going to lead into my next thing, which was, so based on the people that you've talked to, people are willing to go out to the theaters. They're like hungry to go see a new movie and go see Christopher Nolan's new movie.
I mean, like my church has started meeting again the last two Sundays, and you know, they had me run sound, and you had to wear masks, and you know, they had all like chairs where like it was all spaced out, so it was a whole ordeal, like a very different experience to it. And children's ministry wasn't open, but you know, my perspective is I just saw all the chairs that they had set up were filled up. But then that's to say that there's all the, like, you had to sign up early. So I think they also set up the number of chairs based off the number of people. Like they had all sorts of things, safety protocols in place to make sure that they didn't create a hotspot. And as soon, like they were cleaning chairs before people came in, they cleaned chairs as soon as people left, you couldn't enter the room. There's all sorts of protocols in place. People in Texas, people in the middle of the country, I think they have a very different kind of vibe. Like I do not at all with the, like, not that they're not nervous, not that people like, even like I have a certain amount of social anxiety because I'm so used to being at home and not being around people. So I was like, oh, people again. I think all that's still in place. But I think that, you know, I look at the number of my friends that are like at the pool and stuff like that. And as soon as our local pool opened up a couple of weeks back, there were people at it instantly. And once again, there's safety protocols, there's hoops you have to jump through. But I think there's a very different vibe in a lot of the country from versus these really hot spot places that have very dense populations to where, I mean, if I was in New York City, I would tape up my doors. I'd get a hazmat suit and everything.
Yeah.
But it just like that, it like where I'm at right now, it just, that doesn't, it feels like this very distant thing of like, sure, there's chances I'll get that, but that'll turn into a hotspot in Central Texas, where it's very
right,
much more decentralized. I just don't think you feel the sense of it. And so I think that's where it's hard for me to see the majority of people even like 6 months from now, considering the fact that it would be like, no, what was Nolan thinking? Why would Nolan do this? They'll just be like, oh, I mean, it was the first movie to come out. It was just a test. It didn't play out. As opposed to, once again, the cultural centers, the place where the people that think about it the most, they're in LA, they're in New York. And so, but how much trickle down will there be from the people that have influence that are coming out of New York, that are coming out of LA? I don't know. Cause those places have such a different perspective from what it like. And, you know, even the people that the difference from where I'm in very much in the suburbs. So just 20 miles away from Austin, but you go into Austin, the people that I know that are much more city of Austin, urban, they have a totally different vibe from what I have. So I think you're seeing the difference that typical cultural differences of urban, where you have a reason to be afraid, versus suburban, you're like, what are we doing? Like, but that's the difference between you have that much population condensed in a small space. So my default, it's tough for me to see his actual legacy being hurt because he has such a strong track record. Somebody has to be the first. Somebody has to give it a try. And if there's someone that you're going to try, like, let's just see what happens.
Well, and he's not even the first, really, right? Because Mulan comes out before it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I got to say this, through everything that's gone on, Disney has, we always say, you know, we always accuse Disney of not taking gambles, of not taking risks and stuff like that. They've taken several of their properties and put them on Disney Plus. Now, granted, you could say that they were dumping them on Disney Plus because they weren't good, but they made that choice. You know, they took Onward and they put it on their streaming platform, which is a great movie. And you know, now they're going to be unless it gets moved, which it very well could. Mulan will be the first movie the first big
event
to open in theaters. So I don't know. I guess at least in Nolan's case, Mulan will be a litmus test. Right. And so they can figure out from there, okay, do we need to just switch gears here?
And it's interesting the way that Mulan is treated. Disney's putting Mulan out, and then with it's very much Christopher Nolan is forcing his movie out in July. Christopher Nolan, I was reading some of the tweets and probably some of the exact same ones from the same people you were reading.
Sure.
And there's some people pointing out, like, has Christopher Nolan made an actual open statement on this? Or
is it all rumor?
In which case you're going, I don't know. I think there's a side to it also of like even kind of the cultural differences. I think people by nature, I think people in suburban, rural, if you're like where I live during dove season, I hear shotgun fire from my house. During corn season, corn husks blow in front of my house because I'm that close to that many corn husks that they get you up. And
the
people have much more of like a freedom mindset of I don't want the government telling me what to do. And I don't need the government to tell the Hollywood to tell me when I can and can't choose to go to the movies. And it seems like there's a lot more of I blame Hollywood for releasing this movie that's coming out of kind of the LA. There's like that's two different mindsets of like if I get sick, that's on me versus like they created a scenario of danger. And I think that also factors into a little bit of it as well of kind of how people feel about it, which is also once again, that's an urban versus rural mindset of freedom that kind of defines so much of this. And it's interesting the way that you just see two dramatically different mindsets. Like when I see people saying stuff like I'm not going back to the movies for 2 years until there's a vaccine. Like I hear, and maybe it's some of my own carefree nature. I hear that and I go, really, really? Like there's one theater in town that's open and if they'd been playing Scoob opening weekend, I would have gone to go see it. It's pretty far from where I live and everything. So I was thinking that a month ago when Scoob came out, because I just look at the actual local numbers. I look at how many and I go, the odds that I'm going to die from any number of other things are higher at this point in time than I would get this particular thing in the place that I am at.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not that I'm just ignorant. It's not that, oh, it's hoax or anything like that. It's just the density of population versus per number of cases and everything. There's a lot of other ways I could die here.
Well, and, so, and that's the thing. I mean, you're willing to take the calculated risk, you know,
yeah.
And even myself to an extent. It's like I have to factor in everything that's, you know, OK, what could happen if this happens and whatnot. And it's just like if people are willing and they're OK to take a calculated risk, that's their choice. You know, people shouldn't get mad at them. I mean, granted, if they're being irresponsible about it, that's one thing. But like, I agree with you. Yeah, it's just one of those things that you have to take into account all the factors. But, you know, at the same time, when it comes to this whole like tenant ordeal, L.A. and New York are where, because they're so densely mm-hmm. populated,
no.
because they're cultural hubs, that's where a lot of the money for the film comes from.
Mm-hmm.
So I know theaters in L.A. will be open on July 10th. Is it? Is that the new date now?
Yes. Yeah, I will put this next. We had a super chat come in from CM Waters.
Yeah,
thank you so much. With Regal and Cinema announcing their reopening dates on July 10th, do you think Tenet could have kept its original date? You can continue to turn your thought, and then we'll answer this as it ties into what you're saying. But
yeah, sure. So like, L.A. and New York are opening on July 10th, and so they'll have a few weeks to kind of like test things out and see how it's going. And if people are going and whatnot, going to the theaters. So I don't know. I'm curious how it's going to hurt the box office returns.
Because
let's be real. I don't think it's going to make as much money as it would have had it opened in a normal climate. But that's not to say that it's not going to make a lot of money back. And the other question is, like, how much money is it going to make overseas? Because there are still countries who are on complete strict lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's a gamble, and Christopher Nolan really wants to make that gamble. And you know, whether or not it's because he's just really passionate about getting, you know, his film out there, or whether or not it's because, you know, some people think he wants to be the savior of cinema. Some people feel like it's because of his own ego and he has a stake in IMAX, which I think is absurd. That is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. But, you know, whatever the reason, he's really pushing for it, and we'll see how it pays out, or see how it turns out. In regards to the super chat, though, no, because they need a test film. They need films to test, which is why they're releasing Inception 2 weeks before. You know, they're going to release Inception. They're gonna load it with a bunch of exclusive footage from other Warner Brothers properties. Maybe some clips from Tenet. Obviously, we're going to get a first look at Dune and stuff like that. Maybe Wonder Woman 1984. And so you've got Inception, a beloved film that some people, if they were young at the time, probably didn't even see it in the theaters. And again, mm-hmm. if they're trying to reach that younger demographic, which obviously they've been trying to do with the Fortnite marketing and whatnot, then this is a great ploy for those kids who, you know, probably weren't even born then, who didn't see Inception in IMAX or on the big screen. So this is the opportunity for them. And then they'll gauge, you know, how that film did. Were people showing up? And then they'll see, is Tenet right to come out right now?
Yeah. So I mean, my understanding of what took place here is that Warner Brothers looked at my YouTube channel. They saw that I was starting my Christopher Nolan review lead up series, and they thought this is a good marketing thing, but he started too late. He needed a little bit more time. So they pushed back the release of Tenet so that I could finish all of my Nolan reviews before the movie would come out. I'm pretty sure that's what happened.
That's definitely.
That's obviously. I think that, I don't think it was entirely tied to official. Like, had they announced they were opening July 10th, that would have been the deciding factor. I think they just needed more wiggle room in the mix of all of it. There's so many factors they're trying to figure out. How is this all going to play together? And that's where it got delayed in the mix, was because of all of that. So I don't think that if they'd announced this sooner, that theaters would be open, that would have been the deciding factor on any of this. It's fascinating. It's interesting.
Yeah.
And we'll see how this all plays out. And if people show up, I it's so difficult to get a good read on any of it, because if you go on Twitter, it sounds like no one's going to go to the movies.
Yeah.
But then you read all these other news articles and the beaches are packed. And, you know, obviously when it came to all the protests and everything, people were willing to go out. There's a lot of things that, like, there's a side to it that when it's an abstract, will you go out? Like, no, I'm going to go out. But when there's actually a movie out there that you can go see, will people be like, okay, let me see what happens. I'll go to the 10 o'clock showing. I'll go to the 10 a.m. We'll see what happens when there's actually something concrete there, because every time they've opened something up, it seems like people have flooded out to these different things.
That's and true.
As much as there's a percentage of people that are not going to go out and are afraid, there's a whole bunch of people that they just want to go out and do anything they can. So, as much as it's kind of the curious side of my brain, detaching it from all the gross side to all this, the tragedy and everything, it's like, this is very interesting what's happening, everything right now. Just to see how all of this will play out. All right. Speaking of consequences of all of this and studios trying to make the best of the situation, DC has announced they're doing something called DC FanDome, which is basically their own online convention where they're going to do panels for all of their big movie releases, game releases, TV show releases. It's DC everything, and just trying to make a big show of everything. So the Batman, Snyder Cut. And then even, I guess, the rumor over on Twitter yesterday is that the next game, not from Rocksteady, the next kind of the follow-up to the Batman Arkham games is supposedly Suicide Squad. Mm-hmm. So what do you have anything to chime in on DC doing their own little con event? And do you think others are going to follow?
In terms of if others are going to follow, I don't know, because Comic-Con is still happening. Yeah. It's just online. So you might see films going there for their panels and stuff like that. I don't know if any big profile things are going to take part in it. Maybe they do, but I don't really see that happening. But in terms of this whole thing, I think this is great. It's exciting. We'll get our first look. We'll get more look at a larger look at the Batman. We'll see what they have in store for Aquaman 2, Shazam 2, Black Adam, obviously some of the games and stuff. And so, yeah, I mean, this is cool. Like, this is the kind of stuff that I like to hear come out of this thing. It's like, kind of take, like, you know, obviously Comic-Con being botched and not being able to happen and turn it into their own thing. I wonder if Marvel does the same, or if they just go to the San Diego Comic-Con one. That would be interesting to see. I can't see like regular movie studios doing this, just right, because it's such like a,
it's nerd culture.
Yeah,
it's a built-in audience.
Yeah, absolutely. And like DC probably needs a presentation, like a good presentation, in order to get people excited for what's happening, to give them upcoming looks at what their next projects are. Obviously, they've got TV shows that are heading to HBO Max and whatnot, and they've got the Snyder Cut, which they want to, get people excited for. So, I don't know. It's a cool thing, and I'm looking forward to checking it out.
Right. Yeah, when I first saw the headline, I was like, okay, like, why not just do this at the Comic-Con one, or like, didn't seem that interesting. And then as soon as they're saying, like, we're going to give you the updates on the new games, the new TV shows, and you start to realize how much of the brand there is for DC. And right, I got a lot more interested pretty quickly. I was like, oh, this actually sounds pretty cool. And it's one of those ones that you can only do it with something that's as broad as DC has become, with their strong presence on television, on multiple networks now, and some of it prestige, some of it CW schlock, and then movies, Snyder Cuts, all of it. You go, that really can be its own little convention in and of itself that has a lot of really cool stuff. And then with a bunch of high profile things coming in the next year and a half, it made a lot more sense to me as soon as I started to think about it a little bit. Because we haven't heard an update on D23, because I would think like some people are like Marvel just do their own. Yeah. And I was like, Disney is D23. So, I mean,
well,
they kind of do.
I think D23 happens every other year. So D23 wasn't going to happen this year. It was going to probably happen next year or something like that. The only reason I know that is because I went to D23 last year and I was like, oh, this doesn't happen every year. And people were like, no. And I'm like, oh, I guess that's why there's like this like weird excitement in the air for, like, I don't know. The quick aside here. The fact that it just feels so weird for a bunch of people to go bananas and show up for, you know, corporate just like schlock, you know. I mean, that's not, obviously not an adequate way of putting it. There's great stuff there, but it's just like everyone is going to worship this company. It is the weirdest thing ever. I mean, Grant, it's a cool expo. Like, they've got nice, like, costumes and stuff like that. They've got cool exclusives. It's very commercial, like even more commercial than Comic-Con. And the panels are cool, but they're also like, Disney's only going to tell you what they're going to tell you. Like, they're not going to give you any really great nuggets. It's just such a weird thing to, like, just see all these people lining up, like, yeah, like, oh, God, I can't wait to spend all my money on the stuff inside. I'm just like, this is wrong. This is
Funko exclusives.
Like, yes, I can't. I want to see the Mandalorian with Baby Yoda, that Funko. It's like, you can't get it anywhere. You know, it's just, it's ridiculous. It's...
moving along to other big corporations, this piece of information came out.
Oh, yeah.
Ewan McGregor has been cast as Jiminy Cricket in Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio for Netflix. I don't know if this had been announced or if I just missed it or where it kind of slipped in the cracks, but the announcement there to me was that Guillermo del Toro is doing Pinocchio for Netflix, not that Ewan McGregor is in it. So I'm not sure how I missed that piece of information, but, or if it was from a while ago, but, Guillermo del Toro is doing a stop motion Pinocchio for Netflix. So, cool, I guess.
Can you go back to that article? Because I absolutely
about the horniness.
Yes, I love the headline. Ewan McGregor is playing Jiminy Cricket in Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio. Should we be horny? Absolutely. Are you kidding me? It's Ewan McGregor is a cricket singing. I don't know what gets you aroused in the morning, but that gets me aroused. No, I'm just kidding.
My mother's listening to this, and so is my sister. You're going to make this awkward for us. Every time you say something weird or I say something weird, I get a text message about it.
Yeah, you know, I've always wondered, do you actually get a text message? Is there like a weird, is like, who's this creep that you keep inviting on? Is that what it is?
No, the one that I did get a text from my sister one time about something I said. It was on the one where John Flickinger, because I said a crass comment on it. My true lies joke about the dancing sequence. I did get a text from my sister about that one because it was unusually more PG-13 than what I usually say.
See,
so
I
did,
like,
get a text.
Yeah, I just like that they text you about what you say. They don't even like care. It's like I could be dropping F-bombs and whatnot all the around the court. It's like, oh no, it's okay. But it's like, the second Sean mentions the true lie scene, oh wait, all bets are off.
So that's the funny part in all of this. So the context of my upbringing, so my dad was unbelievably crass all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, his nickname for me was a curse word. And like he would only tell vulgar jokes and all sorts of stuff. But at the same time, my mom was church lady that worked at a church. And my mom's worked at a church for 20 years now. So I was a pastor. So that's the part that people might not understand. Like as much as I might not say a bunch of things, it's not like we were very much around it with my dad's bar buddies. We're like unbelievably crass all the time.
Right.
So
right.
You saying it, she doesn't care. Who cares if someone else said something like that? Whoa, Sean, you mentioned Jamie Lee Curtis stripping for her husband in True Lies.
How dare you? But yeah, going back to the
were we talking about?
Jiminy Cricket in the Del Toro Pinocchio.
That's right.
Yeah, so I actually watched the segment of the interview where he mentioned that. He just dropped it like it was common knowledge, and I was like, I didn't realize he was playing Jiminy Cricket in Pinocchio. I mean, that's cool. Obviously, we'll get to see him. Well, we'll not see him. We'll get to hear him sing. So that'll be obviously, everyone gets excited when Ewan McGregor goes all Moulin Rouge. So, like, that's going to be exciting. You know, as for the casting, I guess it works. I don't know. It's kind of an odd role, but also it's like Ewan McGregor is such a versatile actor that I can see him pulling it off. So I'm down for it. Del Toro Pinocchio, first of all, is going to be amazing because it's going to be super unsettling and creepy and play right into just like the really dark aspects of the story.
When was the last time you watched Pinocchio? I watched it last year right before Dumbo came out, and it's like one of those ones you like this is so dark, thematically just explicitly like little kids getting drunk and kidnapped. Everything about it is like, whoa, they don't make them like this anymore.
Yeah, no, I steer clear of that film, man. Like, I didn't like it when I was a kid and I watched it. It was just like deeply disturbing. I mean, obviously the donkey stuff for sure.
Yeah,
which,
yeah.
Del Toro is going to turn into a friggin' nightmare. But just like it's such a weird, I don't know. It goes back to that Germanic like folklore. Like, I don't know how much you are familiar with like German folklore and like stories and stuff like that, but there's always just like a creepiness to a lot of it.
Yeah.
That really like unsettles you. So, Pinocchio being kind of like rooted in that sort of thing has always like, it's gonna be weirder, you know, just like innately. But yeah, man, that the Disney version of it, like Disney couldn't even make that film like palatable for palatable. It's not one of my favorites.
So we had a super chat come in from Chandler Langley. Thank you so much, man. Hey, Sean and Griffin, you guys are doing a great job on this podcast. Also, is there any anticipated movie of this year that you don't mind going to VOD? I have to think about which ones are now coming out this year. Like, I immediately think like Bill and Ted. If that went straight to VOD, I'm anticipating, like I'm excited for it, but it doesn't feel like a movie that I have to see on the big screen. It kind of depends on how the vibe of things. I think we'd said before, like if Saw had gone straight to streaming, some of those movies,
I would have been okay with that.
And I would have been there opening, like rented it, would have been fine with that. What were some that come to mind? What's actually still coming out?
Call me crazy. I know that like part of the draw for this film is the theatrical experience, but I'd be okay if A Quiet Place 2 dropped on VOD. I really would be, because you know, then you're in a controlled environment. Then you're not like, you know, the victim to everyone else's like rustling of popcorn and stuff like that. Yeah. The flip side to that is, like, depending on who you're watching it with, they could get distracted and make the viewing experience not as good as it could be. Because that's the one thing I have noticed, like, rewatching A Quiet Place, is that it's not the same, you know, is when you see that movie in, like, an enclosed theater, lights are down, big screen, surround sound, like, Dolby sound, like, there's a difference. But for me personally, I'd be okay with A Quiet Place coming on VOD.
Yeah, I'm trying to pull up a little article here with some new release dates. All right, let me switch over so everyone else can see what I'm looking at here.
I also, controversial opinion, I'd be okay if Halloween Kills came on VOD. I would be okay with that.
I think that's a big enough event one that I think I'd want the theater. I think we've all said New Mutants.
New Mutants.
We'd be fine with that one. Without Remorse, that's one of these Jack Ryan related stories. He's not the lead in this one. It's the side character, and Michael B. Jordan's in it. I don't know if they had like a tie to Amazon Prime, that there could be a cool way to do something cool release with that, with the Jack Ryan series they have over there. I mean, there's no connection between the two, but I can see something interesting there, even though that's one I'd be excited for. Candyman,
I'd be okay with dropping on VOD.
Black Widow, of course, just toss that one anywhere at any time. Doesn't matter. No Time to Die, Soul, whatever.
Yeah, just like put it on Netflix tomorrow. It's okay.
So I think those are the, I don't know if we covered everything, but most of those other ones feel like things that I'd probably want on the big screen, the proper context for them.
Yeah.
So, all right, moving along, our next topic on here. Just want to talk about Quibi real quick. We haven't talked about it because no one else is talking about it other than to write articles about
poll,
it. Not
doing. Poll question. While Sean is introducing the story and talking about it, how many of you are actually subscribed and watching Quibi? I guarantee you none of you are, but I am just, I'm so curious to see how many of you actually
are. If any of you are on Quibi, let us know down below. Like, downloaded it, anything, because I just don't know. Actually, while you're filling that out, real quick, we had a super chat come in to tackle this one. Katie, do you prefer Marvel or DC? Thank you for the super chat. It's too broad of a question because Marvel and DC are comics, TV, movies.
Sure.
Like, it's too much stuff. I think it's just raw characters. I much prefer DC to the Marvel characters. As just raw characters, I prefer the DC set of heroes and villains. When it comes to the movies, I think that Marvel has just been dominating for a little bit now. How about you?
Well, I feel like we may have answered this before.
Sure. I get this question daily.
Yeah, no, for sure. But like, it is tricky because, like, DC's, if we're strictly talking about the films, obviously characters, I agree with you. I'm more of a DC fan myself in terms of the characters. But in terms of the films, Marvel has been more consistent, but DC's highs have reached highs that Marvel hasn't. Their lows have also reached lows that Marvel hasn't. So it's like,
MCU hasn't.
Right. Yeah. Sorry. The MCU hasn't. So it's like, do you prefer the ambition or do you prefer the consistency? For me personally, I'm just more interested in the types of films that DC is making right now. Like Wonder Woman, Aquaman, Shazam, even the Snyder movies, for as divisive as they are, they did something that, you know, the comic book genre by and large was not really willing to do. And they engage with the real world in a way that, you know, most Marvel movies haven't, outside of Black Panther and, you know, maybe Winter Soldier, although that one, even towards the end, kind of, you know, stops committing to their real world commentary. So I don't know. In terms of comics, it's, you know, both of them have amazing comic arcs. Both of them have horrible comic arcs, and it's impossible to decide.
Right.
But if we're talking films, I think I'd probably just go DC because I appreciate that ambition a little bit more.
Yeah, and I respect, like, I wouldn't disagree with that. The quantity of MCU quality films is kind of the one that kind of says they're pushing it over. But and I wish that they would. Now that they have the clout to take risks, that Disney would do that, but that's not the thing they're known for. All right. Back to our Quibi question. So I asked you guys, have you downloaded? Nope, not me. Nope, I'm not on Quibi. Not subscribed. Never heard of it. Quibi is trash. Nope.
Well,
never heard of it. What is Quibi? What is it? Like, there's not a single person.
Wow, they really nailed the marketing campaign.
That has downloaded Quibi. So Quibi essentially, basically the brainchild of this guy that said, like, what if we did a streaming service that it creates a truly unique streaming, like, we'll design the content to be watched on your phone, landscape, or portrait, both ways. You turn the phone and it adjusts for it. It's designed for the way people watch things on their phone, so it's shorter content. We're going to go out and get a bunch of influencers. We're going to get some big stars, and we're going to create a streaming service for this. And they raised like $2 billion, $2 billion for it. And nobody signed up for it. Like, nobody. And they were like, we're going to give you 3 months for free. All you have to do is download it. And it's kind of going down as one of these epic failures because they, somewhere in the mix, there's just a massive disconnect between this thing right here, what, like, the concept that was able to get investors to go, here's $2 billion, and the general public being like, what is this?
I can't even believe that it got $2 $2 billion. Like
$2 billion.
Yeah, that they were able to get investors to, but because like, okay, let's take the concept, right? So people, so their rationale was, oh, people are watching Netflix on their phones, so why don't we just create a streaming service that's exclusively for your phone? They're missing the point that people are watching Netflix on their phone purely while they're on the go, like whether they're traveling on a plane, and the only reason they're doing it is because they have to. Like, most people are not watching Netflix on their phones. I mean, granted, I could be completely wrong, and if you are watching it, let us know in the chat, but like, everyone I talk to, they're at least watching it on an iPad, you know? So when it comes to Quibi, it's just like your entire business model is not taking into account the fact that people are literally doing this because they have to, not because they want to. And the fact that they're not giving people the option to either watch this on the big screen or, well, big screen, their television screens or their, I don't know, is there an iPad app available? I have no idea. Versus like, you know, having to watch it on their phone. It's like, well, no one cares. Also, there was like no marketing for this thing. I don't even, like, it just kind of came and they were like, well, we're right here, guys. Cool. Like, what is it? And there was no like really exclusive content that like got me excited.
Exactly.
You know,
like,
I
don't know if you noticed this, but I've been scrolling through their shows while you've been talking, and I'm going like, which one of these was supposed to be the hook to get me to sign up? Like, what was the hook on? There's so many shows.
Yeah.
And you'll see some familiar faces and be like, oh, look, that's Idris Elba. Car racing?
Yeah, what? I don't get it. And it's like, I don't know if this is wrong. I'm not 100% sure. But like, the shows are like, they're in bite-sized episodes. So they're not even like full-length episodes of TV. I just don't understand why someone would want to pay for that. Like, I can understand downloading and being like a cool little gimmick that they get for free, or have it maybe be an add-on with, I don't know, some other streaming service. Their biggest mistake was not partnering with another streaming service in order to, you know, this could be like supplemental content or additional content, like a cool little like tab on Netflix where it's like, okay, if you're watching films on the go, maybe take a look at these interactive like movies or TV shows that like utilize your phone screen if you're already in a position where you have to do that. No one's gonna pay for this on their own. It's ridiculous. And the fact that they dumped $2 billion into it is just absurd. I can't even believe that they were able to do that. And so it's no wonder that they're like about to go under. No one cares.
Yeah, the story of it is always pretty amazing to me. But so their goal for the end of the year was 7.4 million subscribers. They're at 2 million subscribers out of launch. And I mean, they're just nobody signing up. There's just no, and they're not, people aren't using it. I mean, it's just a total blunder right out of the gate, to an epic degree of, it feels very much like the sort of thing that you can see where someone that's, they're trying to figure out the next great thing. They're trying to get ahead of the curve, but they're looking for an idea to get ahead of the curve. They're not someone that really gets the space. They don't understand why people do what they're doing.
Right.
Much like you said of like the reason that someone is at watching Netflix on their phone at the dentist's office isn't because this is the way they like to watch things. It's because they're at their dentist's office.
Yeah.
they're bored at their dentist's office. And so they don't need you to create TV shows for their phone, for the dentist's office. It dramatically misread entirely what people were doing.
Yeah.
And even like the concept of like, you can watch it like this or like this, it's designed for both. You even think immediately, like, if you know anything about filmmaking, what you just did, like the options, how much you restricted what you can do if you told everyone they have to do that. Like, you can get a director to get excited about that idea. And you can make a movie that's interesting based off, like, if you watch it like this or like this, you see different things, you have to watch it twice. You have a Christopher Nolan do something like that, you can see immediately where that's like an interesting concept with a director that's thinking like a visionary. But if you're thinking as a business person, like, what if you play around with your phone like this?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's, I think they just, dramatically bad idea that is going to go down in history is a hilarious failure that even as it's still being promoted by everyone, nobody knows what it is. Yeah. All right, a super chat come in. This one's a bit of an interesting one. Danny K reviews. Have you all seen Guns Akimbo? Very underlooked 2020 movie with Daniel Radcliffe, Samara Weaving, only a few bucks to rent on Amazon. Worth it. We had a whole episode dedicated to this one. Not even the movie, though. I don't think either one of us have seen the movie. But the director basically burned everything to the ground right before the movie came out by getting into all sorts of like ill-advised arguments with film critics, where I mean there was all kinds of gross stuff kind of going on in it, and that basically tarnished the movie's release to where nobody wanted to review it because they're like, I don't want to support this guy while he's actively currently on Twitter continuing to say the things that he's saying right now. It was really gross stuff. So we covered in that like back in February, whenever it first came out. This actually debuted at Fantastic Fest, which I was at. So I almost got to see this last September, and it has the word guns in the title of it. And so I would have immediately been in it. But at these film festivals, they like stack. They don't always do a good job of spreading out which movies are what. And so I missed it essentially before all the scandal, before all the reasons that people stopped wanting to poke with a 10-foot stick, just because I was at this film festival and it was like competing against like Jojo Rabbit or something like that for the time slot. So I just couldn't miss Jojo Rabbit. So
yeah.
Anyway, that's kind of my first intro to it. Say I have not seen it yet. Now that things have cooled down, I'm mildly interested, and I've heard varying things as to whether I would like it or not. That sound like there's some elements to it that would be interesting to me, and some elements that maybe don't work so well. How about you, Griffin?
I have not seen it, and I probably will not see it because of the whole debacle with it. I don't really want to support someone who's just like a racist and like is taking advantage of, you know, some person's misfortune to just go effing bananas.
My mother is listening.
Sorry, that's twice this episode.
She is listening in her office at her church, probably turned up loud because she's old enough. She's got to crank it up loud. So in the middle of the church office, they just heard your naughty words.
I know. I need to go just bathe in holy water for a little bit.
Yes.
For all the reasons that we talked about during that episode, I'm just not going to watch it. Yeah. I mean, like I wasn't really that excited to begin with. It seemed like a kind of movie that was all style and no substance. And whatever
kind of style, though, that's the thing that has
guns, tape,
and Samara Weaving in one of these weird movies. She picks good weird movies like this, and then all the fun got ruined by crazy director man being awful.
So I just it didn't really, and it felt like what the movie was trying to get at was just like a very like I don't even know. And I'll just leave it at that. I don't want to say something that might offend someone, so
The messaging of the movie, based on my understanding, combined with the behavior of the director, compounds how bad the director's behavior was. Because it was like, whatever you're trying to communicate in light of what you're doing right now, no, not cool. Like there's a difference between people maybe needing to have thicker skin and you're saying racist things. Like you're saying horrible things to people, and you're it was not good. But we had a whole episode kind of tackling a bunch of that stuff and reading through some of the different kind of takes on it and the reason that it was such a big problem. So all right, moving along to next one, we'll touch on this one real quick. We covered this back in February when it was first announced that Steven Spielberg was dropping out of Indiana Jones 5, and at the time, right before this happened, Harrison Ford was promoting The Call of the Wild, and he's saying, we start filming in 2 months. Like, he said that. And whether he's a crazy old man.
I'm just like starting to believe that he just pulled that out of thin air.
Yeah,
like, he didn't actually have a timetable. He was just like, someone asked him a question. He's like, well, we're gonna film it in 2 months. He's just like, to get himself out of hot water. He's just like, all right, I'll just feed him this. It's never gonna happen.
So he says that, and then very shortly afterwards, Steven Spielberg drops out really suddenly. James Mangold was rumored. Now he's confirmed. Right. And so then the question was, like, is James Mangold going to kind of run with the script? Me and you were like, that's not going to happen. This thing's not filming for a long time if it ever happens. So the guy that was on board writing the script with Mr. Spielberg basically confirmed he's no longer involved and kind of gave his little take on what that was. And the whole full quote is, when James Mangold came in, he deserves a chance to take his shot at it. I'd done several versions with Steven, and when Steven left, it seemed like the right time to let Jim have his own take on it and have his own person or himself write it. Right. And that seems like a very good diplomatic answer.
Right. Yeah.
That's a very good diplomatic answer, because everything he says there makes total sense. Whether that's 100% true or whether that's like, hey, let's soften things a little bit. Either way, it makes sense. And it's a very dignified response of like, hey, I worked on this. And he doesn't even like close the door on like, if 6 months from now, Mr. Mangold's like, hey man, want to give it a spin. He doesn't burn any bridges. He says,
right,
I had my shot at with Steven. Let James do whatever he wants to do. There's no reason to kind of turn this into an arm wrestling match.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, I think it makes sense, and I'm kind of glad that that's the direction they're going with. That like Mangold's kind of just like he's going to come in and do his thing. Whether or not I agree with his attachment to the project, I'm glad that he's not being his creativity isn't being it's not hindering on like the stuff that Spielberg and Kep were originally coming up with before. So if Mangold comes in here with a fresh pair of eyes, has a new vision, and like thinks that he can do something interesting and whatever, then that to me is more interesting than just having Kep and Spielberg spin their wheels for eternity.
Right.
So I still don't agree with Mangold as the choice. I think he's a good filmmaker. I think he can do a good job on this property. I'm not 100% sold, and that's because I don't know if he'll get to the heart of what makes Indiana Jones Indiana Jones, and if he'll be able to capture that that World War II era adventure serial sort of feel, so I don't know. I hope to be proven wrong, but I really just don't want to see Old Man Indy. I really, really do not want to see that, because it's not at all what the character is about.
I just don't know what they can do with it with an 80-year-old Indiana
that's
Jones.
The other thing. Reboot it, man. Like, come on. Don't even reboot it. Just get a new actor and just continue. Like,
and maybe that's the plan. Maybe that's the whole thought of like, we'll do one step at a time. Spielberg's out. It's still Indy 5. Yeah. And then 6 months in, kind of like what they did with, the Ben Affleck situation where it was like they trickled the information over the course of a year and a half. I had a super chat come in from Faisal. Says, Sean, enjoyed your first Bollywood review. Would you like to see you do more foreign films? Have either of you seen The Raid Redemption? Great, pure action flick. Oh, yeah, of course. I haven't seen The Raid 2, though. Actually, just received it from a fan. It's right over there in some fan mail about 2 weeks ago, both Raid and Raid 2. But I've seen The Raid 4 or 5 times, a great action film with amazing choreography, simple, straightforward plot line that works. I love that kind of thing. So, and there's no reason I haven't seen the second one other than I just haven't. Like literally a group of us guys watched the first Raid together and we're going to watch the second one, and they might have. I just missed the day that they got together. To your question of more foreign film reviews, I'm kind of actively right now trying to have a day of the week where I'm doing something different. I've got a Hong Kong film lined up, I think, for next week or the week after that I'm going to cover. So I'm actively trying to do a little bit more of that. And then I think a little bit older Hollywood too. Not that those are going to be mainstays of my channel, but I'm trying to do my easy tee off Marvel trilogies ranked, and then that gives me the freedom to then talk about Three Idiots, a Bollywood film. It gives me the freedom to talk about some other stuff. But
And I saw the video did really well for you, which I was like really happy to see.
It did better than my Memento review.
That's wild.
Yeah. So it was a solid hitter. And that's what's interesting. Trying to figure out how things work. My Nolan reviews they're my weakest two performing videos of my last 10. And then the Bollywood one, which was like, this is just doing something crazy different, did all right. And so I'm hoping to make that kind of like a little something that's kind of in there as much as I can to do some stuff that's very different.
Yeah.
And stretches me as movie reviewer guy. Have you seen The Raid? I'm assuming you've seen.
Oh yeah. 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 I've seen both of the Raid films. I mean, they're some of the best action films right. of all time, and they're incredibly influential. So, yeah, no, I they're great. Absolutely. Yeah, they're amazing.
Okay. We've got one more super chat coming in, and then we're gonna review the Five Bloods and then another one.
Sweet.
So Ollie with the super chat, thank you so much. Favorite Tim Burton movie, and would you ever rank his films? As for the second one, I would. Whenever his last film came out, Dumbo, the timing was just, I had just gone full time. And so I was kind of balancing a lot of different stuff and getting used to the grind of it. But I would assume whenever he has a next big release that I would try and rank his movies. It's not a guarantee. They're tough to do when you have someone that's like 13 movies. I don't know how well it'll do. So there's a lot of that factors into it, but absolutely would I do it. Yeah. Favorite Tim Burton movie.
I will go with this one first because it's not what people might think. My favorite Tim Burton movie, and it's my favorite musical of all time, is Sweeney Todd.
Interesting. Interesting. I don't know. It's tough to say because he has such a distinct style. I have so much nostalgia for Batman 89 because that's like my childhood.
Right.
So Batman 89 is by default. Like if I have one that I can take with me to an island, I would take Batman 89. So if that's your test, like which one is the one I've watched the most, which is the one that means the most to me, it's that one. I'm not answering which one is the best. That's a totally different question.
If we're going like best off, like versus favorite, I would say his best is probably Ed Wood. That just is, you know, with Depp's performance, with like what Burton is tackling and just like, you know, the prestige value behind it, that's probably up there, like if not his best.
Yeah. So, and there's a lot of his I actually haven't seen. He's an odd director because he's so mainstream.
Right.
And some of his stuff got so corporate, but at the same time, he has such a distinct voice and style. So it's a very odd mix of auteur, corporate guy all at once, which is such a strange thing to do all in kind of one mix of all of that. All right, moving along to our next subject of the day. Last night, I was finally able to watch Da Five Bloods, the new Spike Lee film that's about a group of Vietnam veterans who in the present day decide to go back to Vietnam where they'd buried some gold to try and track it down. It kind of gives flashbacks to the war, has a lot of commentary. It's a Spike Lee movie. A lot of commentary on the treatment of African Americans in general, but even especially in terms of they served and were forced to serve in what's, you know, not a good war and do immoral things that deeply broke them and then came back and weren't treated well. And so the movie for the first half of the film is a lot about them and understanding who they are and what they've become. And then the second half kind of turns into this trying to get away with the loot thriller film. And I'll say for me, it was a very interesting, odd experience that made a lot more sense to me when the credits started rolling and I saw who wrote the screenplay. And I'll elaborate on that in just a second. But the first half of the movie, I wasn't fully on board with it. I thought it was pretty unfocused and taking too long to get to its point. I was like, man, this is spending a lot of time. It was like a hangout movie, kind of.
Yeah, it is a little bit. Yeah, yeah.
It's like a hangout movie with these guys in Vietnam and meeting some people they met before, running into the Viet Cong, and you're just a lot of them in bars, hanging out in their hotel rooms, talking on boats, talking. And then you get to the second half, and it's pretty as soon as you get to the point in time where they get to get out into the jungle, it very much changes, and it's a different genre entirely. It's very it's like very relaxed, taking its time, and then it hits a point and you're like, whoa, for the rest of the movie.
Right.
And when it was that second half, I was all on board. And when it was on the first half, I was like, man, I'm not sure about this. This feels very unfocused. And it really worked well in that second half. Like I dug it. And I mean, the obvious comparison would be Triple Frontier from last year, except with a lot more social commentary and messaging and themes to it, a lot more depth to the characters and meat to the story.
Yeah.
And even kind of on the messaging, I thought the characters and story themselves, I thought, communicated the message very well about the war itself, about treatment of veterans, treatment of black men that served their country, that I think Spike Lee's kind of heavy handedness hurt both the message as well as just the heist, the exciting side to it. Mm. So I was like kind of all over the place on this one. It was like, I like loved things about it. And I was like, man, that was a little bit too much. And like, I don't think that thing right here needs to be in this movie, because you're already communicating so much and you're over preaching at me. It's sometimes at the wrong time.
Are you talking specifically about Paul's monologues towards the end?
Not even that. I didn't even mind Paul's monologues, but like, okay. I don't want to go into too many spoilers in case someone hasn't seen it, sure. But like the scene where, how to say it? When things really get intense and machine guns show up.
Oh, okay.
And in the middle of it, they start discussing the war, and it the whole movie's kind of intercutting to actual pictures of the consequences of war.
Right.
And like, you're in the middle of like a scene that, for just the plot, it's very plot important. And then it starts going into Spike Lee on his soapbox and shows a picture of a dead baby. And it was like, you're not helping me see your point more, because you already saw, I was already on board with your point. Like, you already communicated it. This is a plot. This is like the plot of the movie scene. And I'm not even watching, because I'm not going to look at that. And so I think there's some stuff where it kind of distracted. And so it was an odd mix of like, and at the end of the day, I'd go positive on it, because I thought that second half was so strong. And I think it does communicate this point well enough. But I think it's, and I said the same thing about Black Klansman. I liked like 85-90% of it. And then 10%, it's him on a soapbox. He's not using story to communicate. He's standing on a soapbox, like beating you over the head, which that's what he does. That's kind of his thing.
Right.
And I'm much like, whether it's a Spike Lee movie, whether it, you know, coming from a faith-based background, the reason I don't like faith-based movies is because it's people standing on a soapbox saying things like that. I don't want you standing on your soapbox. No matter the genre, I want you to use the story. And he had a story that did it. His story did tell it, and he just went too far. So the credits started rolling. And do you know who wrote this?
No, I don't. I don't remember.
You're going to dig this. You're going to dig this one. So the original movie was written on spec by Danny Bilson and Paul DeMeo. And as soon as the credits started rolling, it said Danny Bilson. I was like, wait, Danny Bilson wrote this? If you don't know who this is, his daughter is Rachel Bilson. She was one of the stars of The OC and the show Heart. He has been a screenwriter for like 30 years now. Uh-huh. He wrote The Rocketeer with Paul DeMeo. They're a writing partner. They wrote The Rocketeer. They also were the showrunners for The Flash TV show back in 1990. So that's why I know who they are, because of these movies from my childhood that I knew so well. So as soon as his name showed up, I was like, what's the backstory on this? So basically, they wrote this movie on spec 7-8 years ago for Oliver Stone to make the film. And then whenever Oliver Stone dropped out, Spike Lee took over 4 or 5 years ago, and he converted it basically to an African-American centric story. And that's when I sort of saw it. I was like, okay, I could feel that while I was watching this movie.
Really?
That, I could, because it felt a little bit too much like a movie that it was structurally, it worked. And then it had a little bit too much Spike Lee on the soapbox.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the thing that I'm saying. It's like, and like there's in that, and I'm not saying that is it. That's what Spike Lee does. That's his thing. And so I didn't know if there was like a backstory to that. And as soon as I saw like, okay, there was a different version of this and he came in. Okay. I see how this kind of played out the way that it did.
Right.
What was your take? I actually muted you. Your channel the other day, podcast, and you were talking. And it's like I don't want to hear anything, so I muted it while you guys were talking about it.
No,
what was your
good. Take on it? Well, I'm glad you did, because I'm glad it didn't influence your opinion and such. I absolutely loved it, and for all the reasons you thought it didn't work, I liked it. And that's crazy, because I'm usually not someone who likes, you know, getting beat over the head with a message or whatnot. But I thought that the way Spike did it in this film, like, just it felt like a gut punch, man. Like the end of this movie, not only is it like, I mean, everyone is saying this, and yes, it's true. Like, not only is it timely to what's going on right now, so it hits a little bit harder, but it's just like, I feel like it's just something that when you're watching it, and this is why I kind of like the way he structured it. The first half, yes, is a hangout movie, and it feels a little weird when you compare it to the second half of the movie. There's a lot of things Spike is trying to tackle, and it's less refined and focused than his previous efforts in Black Klansman. Yeah. But I think you needed that first half, and on rewatch, it really clicked with me, and I think it worked a little bit more for me on rewatch. The first half is really just, it's about getting you into the mind of these characters, understanding who they are, understanding, you know, that they've gone through some really through experiences that most people will have not gone through ever, and at a time when they're not even given rights at, like, back home in their own country. Yeah. And so seeing how each of them has kind of, you know, lived with that, either had it, you know, weigh down on them, or like tried to move forward and stuff like that, is fascinating. And I think it informs the latter half of this film, where it starts to get more stylized, where the action starts to take place and characters are making these really just like rash decisions, you know? So, and this is especially apparent with obviously Paul Delroy Lindo's character, who is unbelievable. Unbelievable. I mean, the guy has been around for years and he's given some incredible performances. This is the best performance I think he's ever given, just bar none. And it speaks to something interesting about just like someone who's just like so fundamentally broken and searching for someone to, you know, the leader that's going to help him, that's going to help bring him out. I mean, it's interesting because he's an African American. He served in Vietnam, and for every reason that, you know, he shouldn't be a Trump supporter, he is, because he because of like the rhetoric that you know Trump used at the time to, I guess, win over the people that he thought, you know, using rhetoric to win over people who were the most vulnerable. And obviously this guy is incredibly vulnerable given what he's gone through, and he thought that he saw a leader who could help him out. And it's like through the latter half of the film he comes to terms with what's happened and everything through like his reconciling with you know, their fallen comrade who they've gone back to get their remains and stuff like that. And I also just think it's an interesting point that Spike makes about the generational difference between Black leaders. You know, when Chadwick Boseman, there's a scene where Chadwick Boseman is talking with his platoon, and he's talking about, you know, they always referred to him as their Malcolm or their Martin. And I think something that and Sharonda kind of pointed this out to me, which I definitely picked up on, was that, you know, Chadwick Boseman is telling them that, like, look, we need both Malcolm and Martin. There are times when we can be peaceful, but then there are times when, like, we've been silenced. We haven't been heard, and so we need to you know, get a bit more aggressive and act in a more, you know, I guess abrasive manner and whatnot, that people aren't always going to agree with it, but there is room for both of them. And I just thought that was such an interesting like comment to make, and it definitely applies to what's going on right now. And then when you incorporate the son, played by Jonathan Majors, who's amazing in this, you see a little bit more of that generational divide of where, like, you know, you see his experience that's going on, and compared to you know, the older experience and whatnot. And then they also tackle kind of like the absence of black fathers and whatnot you know, obviously in the characters like growing up and the effect that may have had. And so it's like there are just like so many interesting things that I think Spike is getting at. And for a lot of people, it's overload. And I get that.
And that's what I was like. Yeah. Listen, once again, I'd be positive on it, but there's just too much in there. Like it wants to tackle all of the things that that could be touched on. And so it goes for all of them a little bit. And so it feels very unfocused between all of it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get that. And I think for me, why it works and why I think it all kind of comes home in a way that's satisfying is the latter half of the film and the ending. Once that happens, I completely understand what he's going for. And I think in a larger context, the film seems more laser focused, and obviously I think it is a little too, he's biting off a little bit more than he can chew in this film, but when he brings it all home at the end, it works, and on rewatch it works even more. So I mean it kind of comes down to the fact, like, do you like Spike Lee movies? Do you then you'll probably enjoy this. You know, obviously I think it is a little bloated, it's long-winded, but I don't know, man. It worked for me. It's like, I think it's probably my favorite movie of the year, if I'm being honest. It's just like a great, you know, there's great, you know, homages to classic cinema, like Treasure of Sierra Madre is obviously a big influence on this film. I love kind of like him poking fun at, you know, the Hollywood depictions of the Vietnam War, you know, saying it's like, well, you know, all these movies kind of depict it like we've won the war, but we didn't win the war, you know, and like they all show it from the, I guess the white perspective instead of like the black perspective, which is these guys who are forced to fight an immoral war and take rights from people that they weren't even granted back home, which is where the real fight was. And so just seeing them grapple with that was riveting in my opinion. So I loved it.
Like I said, I think it tackled a lot of that really well with the characters and with the story.
Yeah.
And then it just had a few too many other rabbit trails and took a little bit too long on some of that. And that's where it, like I said, I'd be very clear, I'd be positive, because it feels like one of those movies that either two thumbs up, it's an A+, it's one of the best of the year, or that means you hated it. Like, no. Like with all movies, there's nuance, and you can be like, man, I really liked a lot of this, but it was frustrating that, da-da-da-da-da. And that's what this one was for me, is that there was a lot of those things that was, I wish it could have been reined in a little bit more and focused a bit more.
Yeah, yeah.
We had a super chat come in from Majestic Demon. Thank you so much. Just an idea, would you review every Pixar film leading up to Soul? I doubt it, because I mean, stop and think about that. That's over 20 movies. So if I did one per week, that's 20 weeks where one day per week I'm reviewing a movie, or it's multiple days for 2 months. That's how am I trying to do the math on it? I mean, it's like 4 months straight of every week doing a Pixar video. And I just don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Will it ever happen? Maybe. It won't be for Soul, though. That's not a big enough an event film to do that. And I mean, they're huge endeavors, and there's the opportunity costs. 20 videos on my channel, that's a lot of videos that could be doing a lot of different things, or that's 20 days I'm not taking off, because, you know, I put out videos 7 days a week most weeks. That's 7 days I'm not, or 20 days I'm not taking off, because that is, I have to have a good reason to do something like that. It's not as simple as like, oh yeah, I guess I'll just do that. That's a lot of my time. And a lot of my real estate on my channel that it's tough to justify justify doing that. All right, our final official topic of the day. I watched the movie 7500 or 7500. I don't know the way that they actually want you to pronounce it. If you don't know what this is, it's a new Joseph Gordon-Levitt film. But he's the co-pilot on a plane that is taken over by hijackers. And so it's him trying to safely land the plane and take care of the hijackers. But the twist for the film is that it's entirely set in the cockpit. It's entirely him as the pilot flying the plane in this one space. And so as the plane is taken over, he's not back there as it's happening. You don't see what's happening. You only see what he sees. You only hear what he hears. And so it's all from this very narrow perspective, which is an interesting take on a pretty familiar trope, which is, you know, the hijacked plane, or Die Hard on a plane type thing. But it's not like that at all, because it is so narrow and focused, and it plays realistic. It plays like, is this really happening? It doesn't even cut away to outside the plane to show you the plane in the air kind of lowering. So even as you're taking off, as you're landing, it's from the pilot's perspective of all of this and what he would hear. So kind of my quick take on this one, if you're interested in checking it out, it's for me one of those movies that's and if you like the genre, if you like this kind of thing, if you like the trailer, it's worth checking out one time. But it doesn't seem like a movie that I would re-explore. You get a great performance from Joseph Gordon-Levitt. It's interesting to see this more serious take that's not romanticized, it's not sensationalized. It's very straightforward. You're on the edge of your seat. You feel the knots in your stomach as, like, the terrorists taking over the plane start swinging knives around and stuff, and you can only see what he's seeing. And so it both feels distant, but you feel all the grossness in your stomach as it happens. And the helplessness of it. Like, what would you do? What can you do in this moment? But at the same time, it's not like a movie that was, it's tough to watch because it is so quiet. It's so slow as you're just watching there sitting in the terror of the moment. So it's very good at that, but not one that I think I would re-explore. Did you happen to check this one out?
No, I didn't. I didn't get a screener for it, which is crazy. Everyone was getting screeners for this film, and I just found out that this movie existed last week, and I was like, "What? A new Joseph Gordon-Levitt film? Like, this has been like a long time since this has happened." But no, I haven't seen it. I didn't see the trailer. I just kind of understood the premise and that it was going to be like a really claustrophobic action thriller. I saw some people compare it to Buried with Ryan Reynolds. I don't know if you've seen that.
I haven't. I know what you're talking about, though.
Yeah.
Lock.
Yeah, Lock was the other way. Tom Hardy. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I mean, it didn't really strike me as something that was going to, like, you know, be groundbreaking or mind-blowing. But I was interested in checking it out and, like, hearing your thoughts on it. It kind of seems like that's sort of what it was. So how long is it, by the way?
Is 90 minutes. It is okay, not so long, right, but it's very tight, but you definitely feel the length because you're so much in this one location, and it takes a little bit to get going, and it finds ways to keep progressing the scenario that he's in and what does that look like. But it basically plays in real time as much as it can. Like, it, they take off, they get in the air, and then it plays out in real time until the credits roll. And so then, you know, without wanting to say too much, but like, you know, if you're waiting for them to get fuel, if you're waiting for this to happen over here, if you're waiting for this, you're sitting there waiting as these two characters are staring at each other and they're doing the little, they're each trying to outmaneuver the other person because they're nervous as to what might happen. And so every single gesture matters. And so you're paying super close attention, though it is very slow. So it's not going to be for everyone. My wife, I think she hated it because it's also very, it's a downer film you feel helpless, you feel hopeless. And it's about people that are very willing to kill other people. So it's, and it sits in that, like, you're just soaking in all the, the whole runtime. And so I, in general, I, like I said, I go positive on it. I guess I didn't give a score on. I couldn't even decide on what I wanted to score. The Five Bloods and this one too. It's like two new movies that I checked out. I was like, man, I don't even know where I land on these ones because there's something different enough about them that make them difficult to score. But I'd say they're both worth checking out. Certainly, The Five Bloods is worth checking out. And then this one, if you like the trailer, if it's your kind of film, if you like these kind of closed spaces ones, absolutely check it out. It's not going to totally blow your mind, but it delivers the thrills and the experience that you're looking for. What have you watched this week? What would you recommend as we start to close out the podcast?
Well, I actually had a funny exchange on Twitter with your wife about a movie that I watched earlier this week, which is Nocturnal Animals, which is not a very pleasant film, but I absolutely love it. The Tom Ford movie. My girlfriend and I watched it. She hadn't seen it before, and was interested in checking it out. So we checked it out, and I was just like, oh, I forgot how good this movie is. The music, the performances, the messaging, it is just, is beautiful. It's like that perfect like combination of Hitchcock and David Lynch psychological thriller, and I ate it up. But the funny thing about the exchange I had with your wife on Twitter was that she was like, I read this and I thought she had never seen like an actual nocturnal animal before, like a like a I don't know, like an owl or like a possum or something like that. I'm like, honestly, if that was the case, that sounds like a far more interesting dilemma to have as a person than not having seen this, you know, obscure like indie movie or whatever. So that was one that I checked out. And then what else did I watch? I don't even remember.
So I've been watching Defending Jacob. That's what I started watching. Checked out Life last week, the Anna Kendrick show on HBO Max. I haven't heard anyone else talking about it, but you know, some sort of thing my wife would be really into, and I had enjoyed it enough. And we started Defending Jacob, the Chris Evans one, as this assistant DA. His son is accused of murder. 14-year-old son is accused of murder. So all the ramifications for the family, the investigation, everything. People have been telling me to check this one out for months, and I just hadn't because I was just too busy. And then finally had this opening, and then we had on your podcast, they recommended it, and I was like, oh. As soon as they said, like, I didn't know what the concept was of it at all. And as soon as they said, like, oh, his son's accused of murder, he's a DA, I was like, oh, I'm in. That's something my wife and I'll get all in on. And so then as soon as we had an open night, we started watching it. And then I had to actively, like, wife, I got to watch The Five Bloods. You got to go. And she's like, can we watch one more episode? Okay, we'll watch one more episode. So I ended up being up until about 3 trying to get everything watched, plus watching a bunch of Defending Jacob. And then we'll binge more of it tonight. But so that's what we've been checking out. It's very much sucks you in, binge TV.
Yeah, that's it. My mom and my sister were watching, and they've absolutely loved it. And they actually read the book, you know. So that it was a nice kind of like hearing how they viewed it and whatnot. I still need to watch it, man. I haven't gotten around to it, and now I'm just like, oh gosh, it's already over. I need to, like, you know, there's other stuff that requires my attention probably more, but I don't know. Yeah, but yeah. Did you get a chance to check out the King of Staten Island?
No, I don't know that I will, because I don't want to pay $20 to talk about a movie. It's like one of those ones that it's not on brand enough that I feel like I should. And it's not one that I'm naturally like. I'm not a big Judd Apatow guy, and I'm not a big Pete Davidson guy. I never saw Trainwreck. And I haven't, like, I've liked some Judd Apatow ones, especially the first couple, 40-Year-Old Virgin and Knocked Up. And then it just seemed like he kind of, I don't know what the language for it would be, but it lost some of its magic and appeal and just the raw human emotion of those early ones in him trying to recapture some of that. So I haven't checked it. I don't know if I will. It's paying $20 to give my opinion on it doesn't seem like a good deal to me. Doesn't seem like something I'm interested in doing. What's that? The Becky with the new one with Kevin James. Seems more appealing to me, and it's cheaper. You can actually rent it for a normal amount. And so I don't know if it'll be good, but it's under $10. And,
Well, that's the thing. It's like, I don't know what, like, I get what Universal is doing, what they're getting at. They're like, listen, it's a theatrical movie. You're going to pay $20 to rent it. But it's like, they're the only studio doing that.
Yeah, $20. Like, yeah.
Warner Brothers lets you buy Scoob for $25.
Right, exactly.
Like, just come on.
And I'm like, did they... I mean, I don't know if they gave who they gave screeners out to or like who they let check things. But it's literally here, pay $20 to review my movie. That's pay $20 yeah. to do work. And, you know, Scoob, I was totally fine doing that. Scoob has played in my house like 5-6 times because I got kids.
Oh, really? Yeah,
but,
yeah.
you know, King of Staten Island, I'd pay $20. I'd watch it once and then I don't even own it. And that's really, really frustrating. All right, everybody. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We'll take a few questions on the end if you're watching the live version. If you're on the audio version, we stream these live almost every single week on my community tab. I let you know what time that is happening. It's normally at Wednesdays at 11 a.m. Central Time. We'll be back next week. And thank you guys so much for watching. Griffin, where can we find you on the internet?
Yeah, you guys can head on over to the FilmSpeak channel. I should have my interview with Sir Kenneth Branagh up later today, so you can keep an eye out for that. And then also you can give me a follow on Twitter at Griff Schiller if you want to hear my thoughts that are unfiltered, I guess. I have no idea.
Thank you guys so much for listening, and keep talking movies too much.